My name is Victor Kubik, President of the United Church of God. Welcome to another edition of the Inside United podcast. Our guest is Dr. Rick Barrent from Edmonton, Alberta, and we're connected to him via Zoom. Welcome to Inside United.
I'm very happy to be here, Victor. Really nice to speak with you. I've appreciated all of your encouraging letters in recent weeks.
Well, thank you very much. Rick, tell me about yourself, about your background, education, and qualifications.
I often hesitate to be a talking head expert, as so many media experts are portrayed on media, television, and on the internet. And they come with their own set of qualifications. Certainly I am perhaps unique in some ways in terms of being both an elder and a doctor. I did get a wonderful education growing up in God's church, went to Ambassador College, and then returned to Canada to study medicine here in our home city of Edmonton. And I'm an elder here in UCG. But I got my MD here. The MD that I have got was then followed by 5 more years of specialist training in pathology. So I'm more on the science end of disease than the clinical treatment end of disease, but mm-hmm. I work hand in hand as the scientist behind the doctors that are doing the treating. I'm certified both in the United States and Canada, a fellow of the College of American Pathologists, fellow of the American Society for Clinical Pathology, and of course a fellow in the Royal College of Physicians in Canada here. I'm a clinical professor at the University of Alberta, working in laboratory medicine and pathology, and also helping in experimental oncology in the Cancer Institute where I'm working. I came to the Cancer Institute as director of laboratories years back, and I continued to practice there as a consulting pathologist. And right now my main focus is on cancer diagnosis and treatment, biomarkers, especially for breast cancer. And I spend a lot of my time helping surgeons in the OR during breast surgeries for cancer. So that sort of gives you a picture of what I do. And in many ways, this specialty that I'm in is behind the scenes. It's the science of disease. And I'm trained in areas of clinical pathology as well as sort of anatomical or cancer pathology. And clinical pathology includes virology and microbiology and those things that come to the fore here in the COVID-19 epidemic. And certainly I feel as though I've gone back to school, rehearsing all the obsolete knowledge I might have had when I was working in a virology lab, and now being totally blown away by the progress of science in these fields. But certainly the inspiring thing I see, just to share briefly, is the convergence of science down to the molecular level. You know, when I started my training and worked in anatomical pathology, I was looking at the cancer cells themselves, looking at the tumors. And I've now reached the point where I can actually look at each cancer cell and count the number of cancer genes in that same cancer cell with my light microscope. So I'm sort of pumped by the progress and inspired by the complexity of life. And I see this convergence between even my work looking at cancer and the work being done in virology now as we confront this COVID pandemic. In very real terms, the same molecular techniques and tools are now being used in both cancer and COVID. Ironically, we're actually working on developing a vaccine against prostate cancer, and we've switched gears and are now using that same vaccine technology to target COVID. Mm-hmm. So you've got virology and pathology, cancer pathology, kind of converging right down to the molecular level.
Well, there seems to have been progress not only in the last several years, but just the last several months, you know, from the time that COVID-19 mm-hmm. appeared, and it appears that there's all kinds of new knowledge about the subject.
Even as a physician, I find it a challenge to understand and keep up with the science. And I know this is record-breaking progress in this fight. It's quite inspiring, and it's good news.
Now, what are you actually seeing? I know that you're in Canada, and you told me about the fact that the hospitals are becoming very, very strained. And, you know, what can we expect for the rest of the winter? But what are you actually seeing? What can you report on for us?
Well, if I were to give a status report, so to speak, I'll start off with my own experience. As I've told you, I'm a pathologist. I'm basically working in the front lines in cancer surgeries in our cancer hospital OR. So I'm not so much battling COVID head on as so many heroes are around me. I'm sort of the rear guard, sacrificing a lot personally in order to make sure that I enter the hospital through the back door into the OR, and I avoid bringing COVID and death to cancer patients. And of course, I've breathed bottled air in the past. I've used masks and fume hoods. I've worked in contained laboratory environments. I've fought other respiratory pathogens. We fight this on a yearly basis, annually now in the flu season. So for pathologists, this is an annual event, but the COVID experience is new because it's a brand new virus and we don't have any experience as a population.
And that's the thing that, Rick, you know, I think that you need to emphasize, because there are people saying that this is no different than the flu. It might be a kind of flu. It's a cousin of the flu, and they blow it off. And I think it's important to really point out from you as a pathologist just the real danger of COVID.
Yes, we recognize that this is different, precisely because it's different from any other virus we've experienced before. I mean, we see, you know, the four standard coronaviruses that produce colds. We've seen past episodes of coronaviruses that have caused similar diseases, but COVID is unique. It's got its own case mortality ratio and own infectious mechanisms. And we know that, I know that it's very difficult to explain to people who are not facing this in the hospitals how real and how devastating this disease can be in certain groups. One son-in-law is a radiologist looking at the diseased lungs of relatively young people who will survive COVID but will never be the same. My brother Dan has seen whole groups, whole family groups, many of them just struck down together because, you know, they were victimized by exposure together. One classmate of mine had six recent COVID deaths in her older nursing home population. And it's just quite astounding to watch these people develop what sort of looks like an influenza, but very quickly lose their oxygen saturation. And after steroid therapy, just basically not thrive and not pull through like influenza and actually die very, very rapidly. One out of every 32 Canadians so far who haven't been infected with COVID have died. But it's very variable, you know, 1 in 100 for some groups of people. But in our long-term care and our retirement homes, 1 in 4 people are dying. That's like Ebola. It's terrifying for these people and for their families. And the brute force reality of the disease is lost on the public sometimes because everything's hidden in hospitals.
Where are we going next with this pandemic? Have we made progress? And what have we learned?
In some ways, when this pandemic started, I was really happy that I was living in a community that was prepared. We have public health officials, public health doctors who have specialized in this precise eventuality and were there ready to lead. And we had, in wave one, very swift success. We had compliant people who were supportive of doctors, cheering on doctors, grateful for public health advice, who would comply with instructions and were happy to. And so we had this swift success. In wave one, we dealt with extremely rapidly. We were leading North America in testing this virus because we developed our own tests in-house and we were ahead of the game. But we learned an old lesson, maybe. Maybe we're learning a painful lesson. We're following past mistakes, and it seems over the summer we've developed complacency that led to denial, confusion, a lot of people denying the fact that this was a problem at all because we were so successful with wave one. And now we're right in the midst of wave two, and I think we're as bad as it is in North America right now in Alberta, I'm sorry to say. I know that our premier here has quoted Wilfrid Laurier, a prime minister who famously said, "I'd rather try the way of persuasion. There's more to be gained by appealing to the heart and soul of men rather than to compel them to do a thing." And so his philosophy has been to advise and to expect that people will take personal responsibility, that government doesn't have to act, and that we will be successful. But unfortunately, wave two has struck us. Wave one, we had 8,000 cases in 4 months, but in wave two, this past week, we've had 8,000 cases in 5 days, mm-hmm. precisely because we've come into this period of indecision and people rebel against the advice of public health, and we're in a crisis. So that's one lesson I think we're learning. We had the swift success. We moved on to this summer of complacency and ultimately found ourselves in a place where we were indecisive. And personal responsibility was not cutting it anymore. And people were just developing pandemic fatigue and frustration and denying, you know, the power of what our collective actions had produced. And that's the real problem. And it becomes amplified and more dangerous when it's intertwined with misinformation. You know, people initially would fear what they don't know, but then they deny it, and misinformation deludes them into thinking that this is unnecessary or unfair or somehow a conspiracy. And so they move ahead, and not only are they fatigued, they develop resentment and anger and irrationality. So, you know, the public health doctors have kind of moved from hero to zero. Mm-hmm. People don't appreciate them anymore. They're conflicted. They fail to understand. It's amazing.
Well, my wife, she knows that I'm, you know, interviewing you and talking to you about these things as a person who's a great specialist. And she said, "Can you ask him to give us a list of things that we should be doing just as a plain citizen? Like, do this, don't do that, you know, a simple bulleted list that after listening to this podcast, I can take this particular step, that particular step, or what should I be doing?"
I would basically say that on the positive end, we need to be patient and to hang in there a little longer. There is light at the end of a tunnel. Yes, this is already tedious, but we have science to thank for this. We are going to develop herd immunity with a vaccine ultimately. And it is not productive, and I don't think it's anything I could do with a good conscience to just let nature take its course, as so many people advise, to just live life, carry on with business as usual. We can't do that. I think that we need to avoid listening to the polarized debates on TV, the talking heads on TV, and the confusion. When mixed with social media, where everyone gets polarized and into their own echo chambers, this can be the most destructive at all. It basically just creates divisions amongst men. It creates divisions in society at a time where cohesion is key if individuals are to take any responsibility for beating back this virus. We need cohesion. A simple formula to lessen stress, you know, what should we do? A simple formula is, I would say, to listen to properly constituted health authorities, public health officials. Do what they say. Do sanitize, do mask, do quarantine, do self-isolate, you know, stay rested. Take some vitamin D. Make sure your diet is good. Don't overthink this. Don't let up. You know, let's not all snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Let's hang together. And cohesion as a church is certainly important. And that in the history of the past is just the opposite. In terms of my pandemic reading list, one of the most amazing books I did read was a book entitled Journal of the Plague Year by Daniel Defoe. Now, this was so impactful to me. This was a personal account of a man's day-to-day experience during the Great Plague of London in 1665, this terrible bubonic plague where people would literally drop dead in the streets. Nobody knew which way to turn or to go. The calamity of the people made them very humble, it was true, but also very confused. There were people who were pandemic preppers, and there were others who were profiteers and took advantage of the situation. There were conspiracy theories and delusions about this disease and where it came from all over. There was a pandemic trade war, in fact, with some traders in the Middle East. Many blamed the Turks, for example. Many of the Middle Eastern trade partners that Londoners encountered just went ahead with business as usual because they believed, well, their lives were predestined. And there's nothing they could do about, distancing, masking, or anything else. God had already decided whether they'd live or die, and they would just carry on with business as usual. But the opposite was described in the book about Christians and Jews of the Judeo-Christian Bible tradition, who took responsibility and felt they ought to act, to quarantine, to self-isolate, to lock down if necessary, or in fact felt an obligation to flee in the face of a pandemic when appropriate. So some people acted and some people didn't, fatalistically. There were protests against lockdowns. And when I say lockdowns, I mean a marshal posted at your door with your door locked for weeks and people watching over you and searching your houses for disease. There were protests against those lockdowns. There were protests against masks and government rules. There is a lot of confusion. Ministers, Christian ministers, were preaching terror and damnation, and others were preaching that faith makes you invulnerable, so you should have no fear. So it was a pretty conflicting message. Some members were terrified of attending churches, and others were terrified of not attending churches for fear that it might be the last day on earth, and crowded into churches despite the danger. And many people mocked religious people entirely, thinking that no God would do this to a population. So just that one book I thought was the most meaningful to me in terms of imagining the day-to-day experience of people in a real pandemic. And, you know, the current circumstance, this pandemic we're experiencing in our lifetime, this is a gentle lesson. You know, comparatively speaking, the case fatality rate, the suffering and so on is different, not quite so dire as we've seen in other historical examples. But it talks about this collective action problem. We must all pull together. And if we don't all do it, it literally falls apart. It's not a 50% sort of proposition.
I would like you to give me a perspective spiritually of how we go about this, because you are not only a medical doctor and a highly qualified medical doctor, but you're also an elder that's been serving for many years in the Edmonton area. Please give me a spiritual and caring perspective that would be helpful as well.
Well, I think that the first place I would start, Victor, you know, is with the experience of people who have chosen the best public health advice under certain circumstances. And that is not merely masking and distancing and sanitizing, but sometimes the very best public health advice is to stay home. And we are so blessed to be able to cybercast. And so my first thought is for those who are cyber attending under the present circumstances, and partly because I have to myself, in good conscience, I cannot add extra risk into my day that I carry into the back door of my hospital and into the operating theater and in those circumstances. I have a card here on my desk from the church members in Edmonton just saying, you know, we miss you, wish you were here with us attending. And that is something I'd like to encourage, everywhere, that people who are cyber attending, remember them and remember them in terms of including them. Even better than masking and sanitizing, staying at home is far wiser, especially given the age and the comorbidities which place many of our fellowship at high risk. So it's really important. You know, this is a temporary and a small sacrifice, and certainly not a matter of salvation. Our greater commandment in this situation is you know, love. We really have to make sure we express love to all of our members, even those who are left at home, so to speak, and cyber attending,
and not be judging one another, but try to understand.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We should cheerfully promote this collective, you know, public health effort by complying with the best public health guidance. And we must never allow the subtle message to creep in that somehow cyber attendees are forsaking the assembly or cowardly or lack faith. I've actually heard that. People have written me telling me that, you know, people are pulling out Revelation 21:8 and saying that, you know, they might be cowardly if they're staying away from services. And how can we place our brethren, our brothers, our sisters in the situation to say that they're comparable to unbelievers or adulterers or the abominable in that scripture? It's not comparable. We need respect and cohesion as a church. We have to reject that message that in-person attendance, despite its risks, is somehow a demonstration of superior faith. No, we cannot allow division to weaken our united Church of God. We really have to stay tight and close as brethren who love one another, as a sign that we are brethren. I think Don Hooser recently wrote about, you know, the cohesion we need in our church, and he wrote this: while it seems that fear casts out love when we look around us in this world, we know as Christians that perfect love, and that means God's love, casts out fear in 1 John 4. So let's be sure that our love for God and our love for each other are much, much stronger than our fears.
Well, this podcast has been very, very instructive. Thank you so much, Rick, for sharing the information that you have with us today. So thank you for being with us on Inside United today.
Thanks very much, Victor.
Be sure to tell your friends about this podcast. You can find us very easily on the main menu bar of ucg.org. You can also find us on Spotify. We're on Spotify now under podcasts, or else use your favorite iOS or Android podcasting app. I use Pocket Caster on Android and glad to have it come to me every week. Write to us at podcast@ucg.org, podcast@ucg.org. If you have any questions for Dr. Behrendt, you can write to him via podcast@ucg.org. So thank you for joining us. Come back soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.